y'all set?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. I'm going to start talking about a little bit of history here first, okay? Now, Gene Simmons of Kiss once said that he wished that the New York Dolls had made it huge because they would have been a big shock to a country that thinks Miss America is still a virgin. But in a way, the Dolls did make it huge. You guys were the epitome of glam and influenced almost every band that came after you. How does it feel looking back and seeing all these bands that have taken the idea that the Dolls started and ran with it to such an extreme?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I'm going to answer your question, but anyway, the thing that was in front of everybody in back when we started, which was this invisible wall that, you know, you have to be as big as the Beatles or the Rolling Stones to even get a record contract, or to even think about even getting on stage. This was the age of what they call stadium rock. And, you know, where songs had lost their sex appeal and they were epics and they were operas.
Yes.
Being like cool little three-chord progressions, man, that, you know, get your rocks off on, you know?
Right.
And hence the reason why we, you know, we started to play and we started to, you know, it's just going to last about 2 weeks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we opened up that door. We broke down that big wall that was in front of everybody. And then who came after us? Patti Smith, probably the most talented of the whole lot.
Right.
Then came the Talking Heads and Blondes and the Ramones. And that's only in New York City.
Right.
Those are ones. The ones that I'm mentioning are true rock and rollers. And I think that's really what happened. That was only in New York, okay? And now in England, we were on television. So then over there, you had the Morrisseys checking us out. And you had the Joe Strummers, you know, and all the next generation over there, you know? So that's really that. And then, you know, that's what opened up the door. That's what opened up the door to everybody, you know? I once read someplace where Bono was... He mentioned that one of his influences was the Ramones, and if it wasn't for the New York Dolls, it would have never been a Ramones.
Right.
Now, the band that you mentioned, they were, to me, they had nothing to do with rock and roll. They were a novelty band. They were a novelty act.
Right.
And it took them, you know, to have, you know, blood and fire and all kinds of stuff, because I don't know, I don't think it was in the song, you know, because maybe they said something about rock and roll, but they had nothing to do with the revolution.
Right. Now, having influenced so many, the question begs, who were some of your early influences?
Eddie Cochran. All the blues guys. The girl groups, like the Shangri-Las and the Ronettes, especially. Mark Bolan. T-Rex. We had the early band. The early English guys were really cool. Like, the early Who were fantastic, you know. Later on, when they went into Tommy and all that other stuff, I could give a damn, you know. That didn't turn me on at all. As a matter of fact, that's why I feel like, you know, the next generation had to rebel against that, and they didn't want opera. They wanted three-chord progressions, you know, based on the blues, just like the New York Dolls, you know. And we had improvised solos. No two solos have ever been the same, you know. So, everybody else, I think they were more controlled, especially the late '60s, and they were all put together by industry, but not because they wanted to get chicks, and they were like four cool guys that, you know, didn't know anything about anything, and just they were about to learn it, you know.
Right.
And I think that's really that's the true art, you know, the ones that are put together and. Really, you know, by the industry, for the industry, and then once, it disappears, they got the next guy that they put together. I think the true art is when the artist himself has to do it, you know, can't help but do it, you know. Especially when they might make it famous, but they don't make any money, like in my case.
Right. Now,
what would keep you going if you didn't make any money, but, you know, you were famous?
The love of the music.
Well, of course, yeah, the love of music is exactly it, you know, because that's everything else is falling apart around you. And the ones that are making it, I'm not even really talking about you, you know, but that's all right.
Now, Franny Spiotto of Syracuse wants to know, have the New York Dolls been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Have they?
Yeah.
No.
Do you guys think you belong there?
I really don't, you know. I know they have some things in mind as in display and things like that. I don't think that's you know, to me, that's not really the trophy that I'm looking for, you know.
Okay.
I'm looking for that trophy when the banker calls me up and says, hey, Sylvain, you made a lot of money, go spend it.
Right. Now, throughout you guys' history, you guys have been plagued by drugs and death all through your career, from Billy Mercia in 72, Johnny in 91, Jerry in 92, and then Arthur in 2003. Do you ever feel that the Dolls might be cursed?
No. I think the world is cursed.
Okay.
Not the Dolls. The Dolls is a pure, beautiful thing, you know, and what happens in life is what happens in life. You know, sometimes, you know, you might put your kid in that school bus, and then on the way there, who knows what happens, and you get a call, and the kid's no longer around. You know, that's how life is.
Now, having lost friends to drugs and close personal friends, what do you think of these newer musicians coming up that are getting into heroin?
I think I lost more friends to AIDS because our country didn't want to help them, and they totally ignored them. I think that's the real crime. When your society, you know, and the richest nation in the world can't even provide for you, and, you know, just whatever, it's just because you're different, they'll discriminate against you just for your sexual preference, just that on that alone.
Now, I
really don't, you know, I think what happens to the Dolls is, you know what, if I had the choice to do it all over again, I wouldn't change one note.
Oh, cool. Now, speaking of Johnny Thunders, does it ever bother you he was acclaimed for his guitar playing when in truth you basically taught him how to play?
Yeah, but that's the way Johnny was. You know, Johnny was, at first, when we put him in the band, he said the guitar had too many strings, so he was going to take up the bass. And 2 weeks after that, he said, Sylvain, I'm the lead guitar player, now you're the rhythm guitar player. That's how Johnny was. He was like that. You know, he was very, his self-esteem was low, let's put it that way, you know. And that's how, you know, it manifested. But that's you know, that's what gives you your beautiful stuff, like the personality crisis, the course to, you know, Babylon and on, you know.
Alright. Now, near the end of the Dolls' first run, you guys were managed in some way.
You know what, if I could say one thing, the only thing I did teach him is the blues, really. And I think, if you're out there, if I could pass this down to anybody, if you're thinking about playing music, you should definitely learn how to play the blues. If you're going to play rock and roll, you know. And anyways, if you're going to play jazz, you better play the blues. If you're going to learn anything, blues is something that could be interpreted, you know, for thousands of years.
Well, that's great advice.
And it should be in the basis of everybody. Like, you know, most bands, after they make it or whatever, then they finally decide, oh, man, I wish, you know, I'm now going to do a blues album, you know. But I guess then it's too late. But, you know, I think you should start, like, in a way like we did, or if I can mention anybody else in the band, it'll be the Rolling Stones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Start with the blues, that's a great bass.
Oh, yeah. Now, near the end of the Dolls' first run, you guys were managed, like I said, some would say mismanaged, by none other than the infamous Malcolm McLaren. What was it like working with him?
Well, you know, I introduced Malcolm and Vivian Westwood to the New York Dolls at a clothing trade show. Back in 1971, I had a company called Truth and Soul Sweaters, which was like, you know, back then, you weren't a designer, you just winded up in the schmasa business in New York, you know? So we had this trade show at one of these hotels in New York, and I was in one room with Truth and Soul, and down the hall there was this company called, they came from England, and they were called Let It Rock.
Yeah.
And Let It Rock was Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren, you know? And the last day of the show, I invited Johnny Thunders and Dave Joyance, and I said, hey, because that's when the designers, you know, they don't want to go home with their samples, so they
right.
sell them or trade them or whatever. And we went into their room, and, you know, I introduced them. And you know, Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren, they fell in love with the Dolls. You know, we took them to our show, like, the next evening or whatever.
Right.
That was it. That was the marriage within that whole thing. And now, if I could fast forward to 1975, just before we broke up, we had our managers were really like, you know, we weren't getting along with them, and business wise there was no reason to be with them. And Malcolm was hanging around in New York, he was selling his goods, and he came to see us, and he found out what the whole deal was. And I asked him to help us and stuff, and he rented us a law, and we got all that new the new shows together, which were called Red Patent Leather.
Yeah, what did you think of the idea of the whole Red Patent Leather and the whole communist
thing? Well, no, it wasn't communist. It was really, me and David wrote a song. It was called Red Patent Leather. And it was Red, You're the Judge, Red, You're the Executioner, Red, You're the Jury, you know, after the three famous judge, jury, executioner ideal. And it started off with like one pair of red shoes. You know, and then the next guy said, oh, man, I'll get red shoes. And then everybody got red clothes for some reason. You know? And it was Vivian Westwood who was making the clothes, so why wouldn't you want to wear it, you know? And then, of course, which I think David Johansen and Malcolm McLaren, which really never had two words to say to each other, at one point or another, they came up with, oh, well, now that we're all red with the song and everything, why don't we just put up the communist flag? And that was the only thing. Now, that was interpreted by others. Be whatever it became to be. You know?
Right. Now,
but really, just to get back to that deal there, where you know, when we broke up in 1975, you know, after the Red Patent Leather show there, and we were supposed to come back to New York and play the BBC Theater and all that stuff, supposed to be our comeback. Well, the boys, they all broke up. Everybody got into fights, and we were five individuals. We could go on our own. You know, we all got record contracts. But after that breakup, everybody got a solo record deal, basically, except maybe Off the Chain. You know?
No.
So, you know, it wasn't just like, of course, yeah, maybe the Dolls weren't going to make any more records. And, but we all started our own careers and, you know, solo projects, and we were quite successful, you know, just doing that.
No.
But that's what it was. It was when we were breaking up. Like Malcolm McLaren, he started helping us after the Red Patent Leather show didn't work out. You know, we sort of, everybody went their own way. I was with Malcolm, and he was going to, you know, fix me up with the guys in England and stuff. And, you know, hence he writes me the 6-7 page letter that's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, by the way, displayed there. And he goes on for like 7 pages on how, you know, doesn't trust this one, he doesn't trust that one, and then he sends me these little quarter booth photos, and the thing of calling this guy, Johnny Rotten, he can't sing, but he could definitely sing better than Johansen, and he goes on how, you know, the Sex Pistols is going to be my band, and come to England, and, you know, so I gave him my White Les Paul, and I gave him my Fender Rhodes piano and everything, and in trade for, you know, to get a plane ticket to go to England. Well, guess what? I'm still waiting for that damn plane ticket.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how come you didn't do it, you know?
I wasn't about to do it anyway. You know, I was getting my own solo deals at that time, and then I signed with RCA, and, like, you know, did my own project. But I don't know. It was, to me, you know, I mean, I love Malcolm and everything, but I didn't see that as to be his real... art. I thought he should be making records, and I always thought the reason why the Sex Pistols, I don't know, I think their most important member was Malcolm McLaren, but that's my own feeling.
Now,
so if he wasn't in the band, I don't know. I mean, they had one of the songs that I really thought sounded about it.
You ever talk to Malcolm anymore?
Yeah, he wrote about us when we came in the paper, The Guardian.
For the reunion, yeah.
Story in England, yeah, when we did the Marcy thing, and you know, him and David really never got along. You know.
At some point, I want to sit down and do an interview with Malcolm. I'd love to talk to that guy.
Yeah, if you can find him.
Yeah, right. That's what I hear. Now, at one point, you said you gave the guitar to Malcolm. There, he gave it to Steve Jones, who still has it.
No, he doesn't have it. He's been buying and making a pretty good little living on buying those things, putting the same decals that I had on there, the girl on the record, kind of a decal.
Yeah.
Color. And he's been buying them and selling them. And actually, I did his radio show in Los Angeles, and he talked about that, you know.
Well, how did it make you feel when you guys heard the song New York from the Sex Pistols, and it was pretty much slamming the band?
Who cares? It's a bunch of crap.
Right.
You know, I think that was more of, you know, they were trying to talk to Johnny Thunders, you know. That doesn't really matter to me. It never meant anything. It's like, it came and it went, and no one, you're the only one that I ever heard talking about it.
Oh, really?
Tell you.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, I don't think it's that important, but it's all right. I mean, it's probably part of some kind of history to somebody, but...
Now, after the Dolls, you said you did the solo albums, you did the stuff with the Criminals and the Teardrops, but I also read somewhere that you were a cab driver for a while. How the hell did that happen?
Well, you know, everything falls apart, and you got to feed your what comes first is you and your family, and, you know, you can't just, like, come home stinking drunk every night, and they're all telling you how big you are, you know?
Right.
And then that's the end of that, you know? I went back to making clothes again, and I was knitting sweaters and making hats, and, try to start Truth and Soul up again, and, but I'll tell you one thing about driving a cab, boy. When they lost me, they lost the biggest New York diplomat that they ever had.
Right.
And I was around when the kids would come in, you know, like their parents with their kids, I would show them where Ghostbusters was filmed and all the movies, and this one stood there, and that one did that here, and, you know, Bob Dylan once played at the, you know, Folk City, you know, whatever, you know. I was a walking talk in New York City encyclopedia.
Cool.
And sometimes I'd drive kids and they would go, "This dude is famous! Can I have your autograph?"
We're going to fast forward to 2003 here again when Morrissey asked you guys to reunite to play the Meltdown Fest. What was your initial reaction to that?
Mine, I could have done it like, 1975, post the New York Dolls' first breakup. Me and Arthur Kane, you know, we would have done it at a drop of a hat. But thank God for Morrissey, and he deserves the biggest kiss in the world. He convinced David Johansen. You know, David was not interested, and he was whatever, you know, and he'd been very, very different, you know, compared to that music.
All right. Seems pretty into it now, though.
Well, yeah. So once you get up there and, you know, something happens, you know, and you might think this way or that way, but the audience is the one that votes you in or out. Not particularly you.
Right.
You know, at one point, the band becomes the world. It's owned by the world, by the people, you know. Not any longer for, you know, yeah, they know when they're going to go on tour or if they got their next gig. The most important thing for a band is the next gig.
Right.
You know, and but that's it. You know, it's a tightrope of a juggle. You know.
Now, after years of waiting for reunion, especially like Arthur Kane, who was dying to have a reunion, and, you know, he passed away just 2 weeks after you guys reformed for the 2003 Meltdown Festival. How did that affect the idea of continuing?
Well, you know, it's always like, you know, you start talking to your friends. You know. It's like when any tragedy happens. In fact, I emailed a few of my friends. Some people came up and, you know, just like in the very first one when we lost Billy Mercia before we got Jerry Nolan in the band. I mean, I had friends that told me, "Hey, you should quit right now." You know, and if we listened to them,
yeah, right.
Had a you know, New York Dolls album, you know, with Jerry or without, you know. So, you know, there's always good and there's always bad, and there's, you know, what you got to do is you got to sauce it out, and of course, you know, like I said, the most important thing to a musician is the next gig, you know. So, you know, in some cases, yeah, you know, maybe they're sitting behind a swimming pool or something like that, and they say, well, no, the Dolls shouldn't be together anymore. In other cases, they're, like, struggling in some little factory, you know, crappy job, and this music really talks to them, and they say, you know, hey, man, come on, keep on going. See, that's the difference.
Right, now, speaking of keeping on going, what was it like waiting 32 years to release the third Dolls studio record, and how does it differ from other Dolls records, other than...
Well, it was a struggle because, you know, like, at first it was, you know, everybody was throwing in a lot of things, and some of them were so far away from being New York Dolls, you know, and so that was through, you know, and... you know, there was confusion on whether you should go this way or that way. So, to me, I even when we broke up in 1975, I always felt like, you know, the Dolls left me. I never left the Dolls. If you follow my solo careers, you're going to find New York Dolls songs all over the place. The latest thing that I did, my latest album, is called Sweet Baby Doll. I put it out in 1997.
Yeah, the Fishhead there, yeah.
Fishhead Records, right. And you could trace on that, you know, and... I mean, even the show today, you know, when we do the segue from Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory into Lonely Planet Boy, I mean, that's what I was playing live, you know. Those, just exactly the way we play it today, I was playing it live since the late 80s, if not before, in my show. And Trash, of course, and actually Trash is on my Sleep Baby Doll album, you know.
So speaking of Pills, I got to hang
out. Where I do that coffee bit. And, you know, it's always, I don't know, to me, I never really changed. Even though it's always been basically the same. I did have a show at one point called The Teardrop that was, some people thought it was Latin, but it wasn't really. I mean, you mess with music shows just to see how far you can go and where it's going to take you, because that's the art of it all.
Yeah, if you don't do that, you don't find anything new. We'll all listen to the same thing over and over and over again.
Exactly, and music should be an evolution of where you started, you know, and it should always keep on, learning. If not, then that's it. Then basically you get bored of it, and you say, well, you know what, I'd rather do something else.
Now, I want to ask you this one. A lot of purists say that the new lineup isn't really the New York Dolls. What do you have to say to them?
You know what? You got to give them all a chance. You know, you can't come with. I don't know. I haven't heard of anybody that comes to see our show live and has gone home disappointed. I mean, really, really disappointed.
I got to talk
because our show is probably the only rock and roll show that there is in the world. I'll give you an example. The other day, you know, we were playing. I don't know where. I think we were in Boston or something. You know, and. And David, you know, he plays his harmonicas, and he has this, like, little, you know, with our tech guys help him out, you know, because he can't see too good in his glasses, and so they put the right key right next to the song, you know, so if it's Pills, you know, he knows that he's got to play an A harp or whatever, you know.
Right.
And so we were starting, I forget what song it was, but it was our opener, and somebody stuck the wrong key, harmonica on David Todd, and so we kick off the song and stuff, and bam, you know, it was like, wait a minute, something really, really wrong here. And we pulled like one of these Jimmy Durant, he's like, stop the music, you know? And it was so funny, it just broke the whole ice between us and the audience, and it was like, now they were just like beginning to like really get naked, you know, over the whole thing, and let their problems outside the door, you know, and man, it was so loose, and then everyone had a smile from ear to ear after that, and we had such a great rock and roll show, you know. No one would ever do that. No one.
I got to tell you, man, we saw you guys in Buffalo. You remember me because I had printed out the photos there.
Oh yeah, that was you.
Yeah, that's me.
That's my man, yeah.
Yeah, and dude, I got to tell you, that was one of the best freaking shows I ever saw in my life. I loved it. It was stunning. I mean, and I got to tell you, you were one of the nicest guys I've ever met, man. You were so friendly to everybody. It was great, you know. And I mean, that definitely holds up to anything you guys ever did in the past. And I got to tell you, anybody who says anything else is crazy, because it blew me away. You know, I've seen
that's beautiful.
Millions
well,
of bands.
You know what? On that note, I'm gonna have to. This is going to be the end because I know it's almost 1:30 and I got another one at 1:30.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I want to tell you this, though. Don't forget that, you know, no matter how big Kiss got, it still forever and will be a novelty act.
Oh, I understand that.
And a novelty act is not really a rock and roll show. You know, I mean, okay, they might have something, you know, here and there, but well, I swear, you know, the only comparison. The Kiss, first of all, they borrowed, you know, from our song, Looking for a Kiss. That's how they got their title.
Yep.
And they used to rehearse right next to us, and they had this kind of cowboy, western kind of band called Phoenix, I think they were. And out of the success of the Dolls, they first saw the Dolls, and when we weren't successful, you know, we were just at the beginning, they didn't do anything, you know. But once we started, you know, having our shows, that when all the chicks came out, you know, because first the chicks would come out and everybody else wants to come out, you know.
Right.
And once they saw that, that's when they went into that blood and fire and everything else. But let me tell you something. It took them to have blood, fire, a complete face cover, and it only took the New York Dolls, like, as we say in French, their rouge à lèvres, which means their lipstick, and their high heels, and their sexiness. You know, we didn't do anything else.
Amen.
You know, we didn't have to fire breathe. We didn't have to, you know, spit blood on you. Whatever it was. That's a shock. That's more like, You know, like, what's the other guy? Manson, he's a shock. He's also,
right.
also like, you know, there's no real art to that. It's like a novel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And they come in, and they go. And in the case of Kiss, I swear to God, it's, you know, I mean, if I'm 6 years old and I dig them, that's cool. But anybody that's, like, past 6 years old and still digs that band, I got a problem with them.
Right.
I hate to tell them that.
Hey, can I ask you?
I want you to quote me on that. Okay?
I will quote you. On that. I can ask you one more last quick question between you. It's a yes or no.
What?
Do you guys plan on recording another new album anytime soon? Another new album?
Yes, but I hope not. I hope it's not going to be another 30 years.
Yeah, I don't think. All right. Well, thank you very much, Phil. I appreciate you taking the time, man. Keep rocking. Knock 'em dead tonight.
No problem, man. You stay cool, Jack, and I'll see you next time in Buffalo. Okay.
Anywhere I can get within 6 hours drive, I'll be there. So.
All right.
All right, brother. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.